spoon could stand up in it. They had croissants, too, and dunked them into the chocolate. "You know, if you want another croissant, they'll bring you one," said Sebastian, leaning back in his chair. They were the youngest people in the place by decades, Clary noticed. "You're attacking that one like a wolverine." "I'm hungry," she shrugged. "Look, if you want to talk to me, talk. Convince me." He leaned forward, his elbows on the table. She was reminded of looking into his eyes the night before, of noticing the silver ring around the iris of his eye. "I was thinking about what you said last night. I was hallucinating last night. I don't remember what I said to you." "You asked me who I belonged to," said Sebastian. Clary paused, with her cup of chocolate halfway to her mouth.
"I did?"
"Yeah." His eyes studied her face intently. "And I don't have an answer." She set her cup down, feeling suddenly, intensely uncomfortable. "You don't have to belong to anyone," she said. "It's just a figure of speech." "Well, let me ask you something now," Sebastian said. "Do you think you can forgive me? I mean, do you think forgiveness is possible for someone like me?"
"I don't know."
Clary gripped the edge of the table. "I mean, I don't know much about forgiveness as a religious concept. Just your garden variety kind of forgiving people." She took a deep breath, knowing she was babbling. It was something in the steadiness of Sebastian's dark gaze on her, as if he actually expected her to give him the answers to the questions no one else could answer. "I know you have to do things, to earn forgiveness, change yourself, confess, repent, make amends."
"Amends," Sebastian echoed.
"To make up for what you've done." She looked down at her mug. There was no making up for the things Sebastian had done, not in any way that made sense.
"Ave atque vale,"
Sebastian said, looking down at his mug of hot chocolate. Clary recognized the traditional words shadow hunters spoke over their dead.
"Why are you saying that? I'm not dying."
"You know, it's from a poem," he said, "by Catullus. Frater ave atque vale. Hail and farewell, my brother." He speaks of ashes, of the rites of the dead, and his own grief for his brother. "I was taught the poem young, but I didn't feel it. Either his grief, or his loss, or even the wondering what it would be like to die and to have one grieve you." He looked up at her sharply. "What do you think it would have been like if Valentine had brought you up along with me? Would you have loved me?" Clary was very glad she had put her cup down, because if she hadn't, she would have dropped it. Sebastian was looking at her not with any shyness or the sort of natural awkwardness that might be attendant on such a bizarre question, but as if she were a curious foreign life form.
"Well," she said, "you're my brother. I would have loved you. I would have had to."
He kept looking at her with the same still, intent gaze. She wondered if she should ask him if he thought that meant he would have loved her too, like a sister. But she had a feeling he had no idea what that meant. "But Valentine didn't bring me up," she said. "In fact, I killed him." She wasn't sure why she said it. Maybe she wanted to see if it was possible to upset him. After all, Jace had told her once that he thought Valentine might have been the only thing Sebastian had ever cared about. But he didn't blanch.
"Actually," he said, "the angel killed him, though it was because of you."
His fingers traced patterns on the worn tabletop. "You know, when I first met you, in Idris, I had hopes. I thought you would be like me. And when you were nothing like me, I hated you. And then, when I was brought back and Jace told me what you did, I realized that I had been wrong. You are like me."
"You said that last night," Clary said. "But I'm not."
"You killed our father," he said. His voice was soft.
And you don't care. Never given it a second thought, have you? Valentine beat Jace bloody for the first 10 years of his life, and Jace still misses him, grieved for him, though they shared no blood at all. But he was your father, and you killed him, and you've never missed a night of sleep over it. Clary stared at him with her mouth open. It was unfair, so unfair. Valentine had never been a father to her, hadn't loved her, had been a monster who'd had to die. She had killed him because she'd had no choice. Unbidden in her mind rose the image of Valentine, driving his blade into Jace's chest, then holding him as he died. Valentine had wept over the son he'd murdered, but she had never cried for her father, had never even considered it.
"I'm right, aren't I?" said Sebastian. "Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me you're not like me."
Clary stared down at the cup of chocolate, now cold. She felt like a vortex had opened up inside her head and was sucking away her thoughts and words.
"I thought you thought Jace was like you," she said, finally in a choked voice. "I thought that's why you wanted him with you."
"I need Jace," said Sebastian. "But in his heart, he's not like me. You are." He stood up. He must have paid the bill at some point. Clary couldn't remember. "Come with me." He held his hand out. She stood up without taking it and retied his scarf mechanically. The chocolate she had drunk felt like acid churning in her stomach. She followed Sebastian out of the cafe and into the alley, where he stood looking up at the blue sky overhead. "I'm not like Valentine," Clary said, stopping next to him. "Our mother, your mother," he said, "hated me, hates me. You saw her. She tried to kill me. You want to tell me you take after your mother. Fine. Jocelyn Fairchild is ruthless. She always has been. She pretended to love our father for months, years maybe, so she could gather enough information on him to betray him. She engineered the uprising and watched all her husband's friends slaughtered. She stole your memories. Have you forgiven her? And when she ran from Idris, do you honestly think she ever planned to take me with her? She must have been relieved at the thought that I was dead."
"She wasn't," Clary snapped. "She had a box that had your baby things in it. She used to take it out and cry over it, every year on your birthday. I know you have it in your room."
Sebastian's thin, elegant lips twisted. He turned away from her and started walking down the alley.
"Sebastian!" Clary called after him. "Sebastian, wait!"
She wasn't sure why she wanted him to come back. Admittedly, she had no idea where she was or how to find her way back to the apartment, but it was more than that. She wanted to stand and fight, to prove she wasn't what he said she was. She raised her voice to a shout.
"Jonathan Christopher Morgenstern!"
He stopped and turned slowly, looking back over his shoulder at her. She walked toward him, and he watched her walk, his head cocked to the side, his black eyes narrow. "I bet you don't even know my middle name," she said.
"Adele."
There was a musicality to the way he said it, a familiarity that made her uncomfortable. "Clarissa Adele." She reached his side. "Why Adele? I never knew."
"I don't know myself," he said. "I know Valentine never wanted you to be called Clarissa Adele. He wanted you to be called Serafina, after his mother, our grandmother."
He turned around and started walking again, and this time she kept pace. "After our grandfather was killed, she died. Heart attack. Died of grief, Valentine always said." Clary thought of Amadis, who had never gotten over her first love, Stephen. Of the Inquisitor, her whole life dedicated to revenge. Of Jace's mother, cutting her wrists when her husband died. "Before I met the Nephilim,
I would have said it was impossible to die of grief. Sebastian chuckled dryly. We don't form attachments like mundanes do, he said. Well, sometimes, surely. Not everyone is the same. But the bonds between us tend to be intense and unbreakable. That's why we do so badly with others not of our kind. Downworlders, mundanes. My mother's marrying a downworlder, Clary said, stung. They had paused in front of a square stone building with blue-painted shutters, almost at the end of the alley. He was Nephilim once, said Sebastian. And look at our father. Your mother betrayed him and left him, and he still spent the rest of his life waiting to find her again and convince her to come back to him. That whole closet full of clothes. He shook his head. But Valentine told Jace that love is a weakness, said Clary, that it would destroy you. Wouldn't you think that? If you spent half your life chasing a woman even though she hated your guts because you couldn't forget about her? If you had to remember that the person you loved best in the world stabbed you in the back and twisted the knife? He leaned in for a moment, close enough that when he spoke, his breath stirred her hair. Maybe you are more like our mother than our father. But what difference does it make? You have ruthlessness in your bones and ice in your heart, Clarissa. Don't tell me any differently. He spun away before she could answer him and mounted the front step of the blue-shuttered house. A strip of electric buzzers ran down the side of the wall beside the door, each with a name hand-scrawled on a placard beside it. He pressed the button beside the name Magdalena and waited. Eventually, a scratchy voice came through the speaker. Qui est là? C'est la fils et la fille de Valentine, he said. Nous avions rendez-vous? There was a pause, and then the buzzer sounded. Sebastian yanked the door open and held it open, politely letting Clary go before him. The stairs were wooden, as worn and smooth as the side of a ship. They trudged up them in silence to the top floor, where the door was propped slightly open onto the landing. Sebastian went through first, and Clary followed. She found herself in a large, airy, light space. The walls were white, as were the curtains. Through one window, she could see the street beyond, lined with restaurants and boutiques. Cars whizzed by, but the sound of them didn't seem to penetrate inside the apartment. The floor was polished wood, the furniture white-painted wood, or upholstered couches with colorful throw pillows. A section of the apartment was set up as a sort of studio. Light poured down from a skylight onto a long wooden table. There were easels, clothes tossed over them to obscure their contents. A paint-stained smock hung from a hook on the wall. Standing by the table was a woman. Clary would have guessed her age at about Jocelyn's, if there had not been several factors obscuring her age. She wore a shapeless black smock that hid her body. Only her white hands and her face and throat were visible. On each of her cheeks was carved a thick black rune, running from the outside corner of her eye to her lips. Clary had not seen the runes before, but she could sense their meaning. Power, skill, workmanship. The woman had thick, long auburn hair, falling in waves to her waist, and her eyes, when she raised them, were a peculiar flat orange color, like a dying flame. The woman clasped her hands in front of her smock loosely. In a nervous, melodic voice, she said, Tu dois être Jonathan Morganstern, et elle, c'est ta sœur? Je pense que... I am Jonathan Morganstern, Sebastian said. And this is my sister, yes, Clarissa. Please speak English in front of her. She doesn't understand French. The woman cleared her throat. My English is rusty. It has been years since I have used it. It seems good enough to me. Clarissa, this is Sister Magdalena, of the Iron Sisters. Clary was startled into speech. But I thought the Iron Sisters never left their fortress. They don't, said Sebastian, unless they are disgraced by having their part in the uprising discovered. Who do you think armed the circle? He smiled at Magdalena mirthlessly. The Iron Sisters are makers, not fighters. But Magdalena fled the fortress before her part in the uprising could be discovered.
I had not seen another Nephilim in 15 years until your brother contacted me, said Magdalena.
It was hard to tell who she was looking at while she spoke. Her featureless eyes seemed to wander, but she was clearly not blind.
Is it true? Do you have the material?
Sebastian reached into a pouch hanging from his weapons belt and took from it a chunk of what looked like quartz. He set it down on the long table, and a stray shaft of sunlight passing across the skylight lit it seemingly from within. Clary caught her breath. It was the Atomist from the junk shop in Prague. Magdalena drew in a hissing breath.
Pure Atomist, said Sebastian. No rune has ever touched it.
The Iron Sister came around the table and laid her hands upon the Atomist. Her hands, also scarred with multiple runes, trembled.
Atomist pure, she whispered. It has been years since I touched the holy material.
It is all yours to craft with, said Sebastian. When you are done, I shall pay you in more of it. That is, if you believe you can create what I asked for. Magdalena drew herself up.
Am I not an Iron Sister? Did I not take the vows? Do my hands not shape the stuff of heaven? I can deliver what I promised, Valentine's son. Never doubt it.
Good to hear. There was a trace of humor in Sebastian's voice. I will return tonight, then. You know how to summon me if you need to. Magdalena shook her head. All her attention was back on the glassine substance, the Atomist. She stroked it with her fingers.
Yes, you may go.
Sebastian nodded and took a step back. Clary hesitated. She wanted to seize the woman, ask her what Sebastian had demanded she do. Ask her why she would ever have broken covenant law to work beside Valentine. Magdalena, as if sensing her hesitation, looked up and smiled thinly.
The two of you, she said.
And for a moment, Clary thought she was going to say that she did not understand why they were together, that she had heard that they had hated each other, that Jocelyn's daughter was a shadow hunter, while Valentine's son was a criminal. But she only shook her head.
Mon Dieu, she said, but you look just like your parents.
Chapter 16 Brothers and Sisters. When Clary and Sebastian returned to the apartment, the living room was empty, but there were dishes in the sink where there hadn't been before. I thought you said Jace was asleep, she said to Sebastian, a note of accusation in her voice. Sebastian shrugged. He was when I said it. There was a light mockery in his voice, but no serious unkindness. They had walked back from Magdalena's together, mostly in silence, but not a bad sort of silence. Clary had let her mind wander, only jerked back to reality on occasion by the realization that it was Sebastian she was walking beside. I'm pretty sure I know where he is. In his room? Clary started for the stairs. No. He moved in front of her. Come on, I'll show you. He headed up the stairs at a rapid pace and into the master bedroom, Clary on his heels. As she watched in puzzlement, he tapped the side of the wardrobe. It slid away, revealing a set of stairs behind it. Sebastian cast a smirk over his shoulder at her as she came up behind him. You're kidding, she said. Secret stairs? Don't tell me that's the strangest thing you've seen today. He took the stairs two at a time, and Clary, though bone-weary, followed him. The stairs curved around and opened out into a wide room with a polished wooden floor and high walls.
All manner of weapons hung from the walls, just as they did in the training room in the Institute. Kinjals and chakrams, maces and swords and daggers, crossbows and brass knuckles, throwing stars and axes and samurai swords. Training circles were neatly painted on the floor. In the center of them stood Jace, his back to the door. He was shirtless and barefoot, in black warm-up pants, a knife in each of his hands. An image flashed in her head, Sebastian's bare back, scarred, with unmistakable whip stripes. Jace's was smooth, pale gold skin over muscle, marked only with the typical scars of a shadow hunter and the scratches her own nails had made last night. She felt herself flush, but her mind was still on the question. Why would Valentine have whipped one boy but not the other? "Jace," she said. He turned. He was clean. The silvery fluid was gone, and his gold hair was almost bronze dark, pasted damply to his head. His skin glistened with sweat. The expression on his face was guarded. "Where were you?" Sebastian went to the wall and began to examine the weapons there, running his bare hand along the blades. "I thought Clary might want to see Paris." "You could have left me a note," Jace said. "It isn't as if our situation is the safest, Jonathan. I'd rather not have to worry about Clary." "I followed him," Clary said. Jace turned and looked at her, and for a moment she caught a glimpse in his eyes of the boy in Idris who had shouted at her for spoiling all his careful plans to keep her safe. But this Jace was different. His hands didn't shake when he looked at her, and the pulse in his throat stayed steady.
"You did what?"
"I followed Sebastian," she said. "I was awake, and I wanted to see where he was going." She put her hands into her jeans pockets and looked at him defiantly. His eyes took her in, from her wind-mussed hair to her boots, and she felt the blood rise up in her face. Sweat shone along his collarbones and the ridges of his stomach muscles. His workout pants were folded over at the waist, showing the V of his hip bones. She remembered what it had felt like to have his arms around her, to be pressed close enough against him that she could feel every detail of his bones and muscles against her body. She felt a wave of embarrassment so acute it was dizzying. What made it worse was that Jace didn't seem in the least bit awkward, or as if the previous night had affected him as much as it had her. He seemed only annoyed. Annoyed and sweaty and hot.
"Yeah, well," he said, "the next time you decide to sneak out of our magically warded apartment through a door that shouldn't really exist, leave a note."
She raised her eyebrows. "Are you being sarcastic?" He threw one of his knives into the air and caught it.
"Possibly."
"I took Clary to see Magdalena," Sebastian said. He had taken a throwing star down from the wall and was examining it. "We brought the Adamus." Jace tossed the second knife into the air. He missed catching it this time, and it stuck point down into the floor.
"You did?"
"I did," Sebastian said. "And I told Clary the plan. I told her that we were planning to lure great demons here so we could destroy them."
"But not how you planned to accomplish that," Clary said. "You never told me that part."
"I thought it would be better to tell you with Jace here," said Sebastian. He snapped his wrist forward suddenly, and the throwing star flew toward Jace, who blocked it with a swift flick of his knife. It clattered to the ground. Sebastian whistled.
"Fast," he commented.
Clary whirled on her brother.
"You could have hurt him."
"Anything that injures him injures me," said Sebastian. "I was showing you how much I trust him."
"Now I want you to trust us."
His black eyes bored into her.
"Adamus," he said, "the stuff I brought to the Iron Sister today. Do you know what's made out of it?"
"Of course. Seraph blades, the demon towers of Alicante, Steles,
and the mortal cup."
Clary shook her head. "The mortal cup is gold. I've seen it. Adamas dipped in gold. The mortal sword, too, has a hilt of the stuff. They say it's the material that palaces of heaven are built from. And it isn't easy to get hold of. Only the Iron Sisters can work the stuff, and only they're supposed to have access to it. So why did you give some to Magdalena? So she could make a second cup, said Jace. A second mortal cup? Clary looked from one of them to the other, incredulous. But you can't just do that. Just make another mortal cup. If you could, the Clave wouldn't have panicked so much when the original mortal cup went missing. Valentine wouldn't have needed it so badly. It's a cup, said Jace. However crafted, it will always be a cup until the angel voluntarily pours his blood into it. That's what makes it what it is. And you think you can get Raziel to voluntarily pour his blood into a second cup for you? Cleary couldn't keep the razor edge of disbelief from her voice. Good luck. It's a trick, Clary, said Sebastian. You know how everything has an alliance? Seraphic or demonic? What the demons believe is that we want the demonic equivalent of Raziel. A demon great in power who will mix his blood with ours to create a new race of shadow hunters. Ones not bound by the law, or the covenant, or the rules of the Clave. You told them you want to make backward shadow hunters? Something like that. Sebastian laughed, raking fingers through his fair hair. Jace, do you want to help me explain? Valentine was a zealot, said Jace. He was wrong about a lot of things. He was wrong to consider killing Shadowhunters. He was wrong about Downworlders. But he wasn't wrong about the Clave or the Council. Every Inquisitor we've had has been corrupt. The laws handed down by the Angel are arbitrary and nonsensical, and their punishments are worse. The law is hard, but it is the law. How many times have you heard that? How many times have we had to duck and avoid the Clave and its laws even when we were trying to save them? Who put me in prison? The Inquisitor. Who put Simon in prison? The Clave. Who would have let him burn? Clary's heart had started to pound. Jace's voice, so familiar, saying these words, made her bones feel weak. He was right, and also wrong, as Valentine had been. She wanted to believe him in a way she hadn't wanted to believe Valentine. Fine, she said. I understand the Clave is corrupt, but I don't see what it has to do with making deals with demons. Our mandate is to destroy demons, said Sebastian. But the Clave has been pouring all its energy into other tasks. The wards have been weakening, and more demons have been spilling into Earth. But the Clave turns a blind eye. We have opened a gate in the far north on Wrangel Island, and we will lure demons through it with the promise of this cup. Only when they pour their blood into it, they will be destroyed. I have made deals like this with several greater demons. When Jace and I have killed them, the Clave will see we are a power to be reckoned with. They will have to listen to us. Clary stared. Killing greater demons isn't that easy. I did it earlier today, said Sebastian. Which is incidentally why neither of us is going to get in trouble for killing all those bodyguard demons. I killed their master. Clary looked from Jace to Sebastian and back again. Jace's eyes were cool, interested. Sebastian's gaze was more intense. It was as if he were trying to see into her head. Well, she said slowly, that's a lot to take in, and I don't like the idea of you putting yourselves in that kind of danger. But I'm glad you trusted me enough to tell me. I told you, Jay said. I told you she'd understand. I never said she wouldn't. Sebastian didn't take his eyes off Clary's face. She swallowed hard. I didn't sleep much last night, she said. I need to rest. Too bad, said Sebastian. I was going to ask if you wanted to climb the Eiffel Tower.
His eyes were dark, unreadable. She couldn't tell if he were joking.